Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to NCWCC Digital Online Broadcast Network. Today is July 27th. I'm your host, Patricia Hunt. We're broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon. Today we have with us Mike Denby. Mike is CEO, Chief Executive Officer of Denby Energy Auditing. He's an expert on energy efficiency. Mike, we're going to learn a lot talking with you today. Welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Mike, first of all, why don't you start by telling us what exactly is energy auditing?
Well, energy auditing is simply a fancy way of saying how do you reduce your energy use. And auditing, the purpose of an audit is to identify where you're using energy and to find ways to reduce it. A lot of people think that energy is energy, but if you can reduce your energy use, you're going to reduce your costs. And by reducing costs, that's good for the homeowner, it's good for business owners, it's good for the economy, it's good for everybody.
That's great. Tell us, first of all, how many people are doing energy auditing today? How many homeowners are doing energy auditing? Homeowners or businesses are doing energy auditing today?
Well, the number is really hard to calculate, but everybody does it at some level. The second that you are doing anything in the energy efficiency world, you've done some level of an audit because you've gone out and determined that that light bulb that you've been burning for the last 10 years is probably wasting a lot of energy, so you buy one of those fancy new ones, which are called CFLs. You put that in, you actually have done at some very small level, but you have done an energy audit. You looked at your energy use and said, there's a better solution to this. Businesses are the prime targets for a lot of energy efficiency from a economical standpoint because businesses are about money. And if they can save money, then that's the bottom line dollars for them. And so getting an audit for a business is a very, very important part of just their overall business structure. It's becoming more and more ingrained into the culture of how a business should operate. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of businesses out there that still resist it. They still look at it and think, I'll do it one of these days, but they never do it. Homeowners are the big target because they are the political target, I'll say. They are the one that draws the most eyes because there are more homes than there are businesses. But your average home uses exponentially less power than a business uses. So in terms of energy savings, Businesses are a better target, but homes, there's plenty to be saved there. On average, the Energy Star estimates that the average homeowner can save upwards of $700 a year by doing an energy audit and implementing those energy improvements that they've found during the audit.
So how much are we spending? How much are homeowners spending on their energy costs every year anyway?
They are spending, according to the Energy Star numbers, which are probably the most uniform across the board for accuracy, they're spending somewhere around the neighborhood of $2,100 a year on energy expenses. So if you look at your own energy bills and look at them over a year, that's the average, $2,100. I know a lot of homeowners that are way above that. And I know some homeowners that are very proud that they're way below that level, but the average is about $2,100 a year. So you can save, according to those statistics, you can save up to one-third of your energy bill if you do an audit and then implement those savings and those savings changes and put them into place.
So doing the things that your organization recommends can save a person $700 a year, is that right?
Yeah, that's a ballpark number. Every home is different. Some homes are leakier, some homes are better, some homes are bigger, some homes are really small. But, yeah, in general, the number that the EPA and Energy Star have put forth is you can save about one-third. So if you look at your energy bill, depends on how big your house is or how small it is, you can probably save somewhere in the ballpark of one-third of that.
Let's talk weatherization. What are some of the things that people can do to their homes to actually lower their energy costs?
Sure. Weatherization is basically the term that's being used a lot these days to define what is called what are basically the non-technical solutions for energy savings. And by that we mean we're not going in there with tools to determine the tightness of the air package and how well the house holds its heat. What we're talking about is simple things like how much insulation do you have in there? Do you have gaps in the windows? Have you caulked the broken caulking? Have you re-caulked around the windows and doors? Some of those things are really simple, easy solutions that people just don't think about. And when you think about it, I don't have the statistic off the top of my head, but when you look at a door, a good example is a door or a window, and you'll see a crack around that where light will come in around the side of it. Like, oh, yeah. That's just a small crack. Well, if you take that crack and you actually add it up according to the actual formulas for it, a lot of these, you get like a quarter-inch crack around the door frame. When you're sitting on the couch, you look out the front door and you can see light under the door or above the door, on the side of the door. You get up to the neighborhood about a quarter of an inch of a crack. It turns out to be a hole about 6 inches by 6 inches. So if you were to actually that would be a hole in your wall about 6 inches by 6 inches. So you're like, well, of course I would patch that, correct? Yeah, everybody would patch that hole. Well, why don't you patch the smaller one? It's just a different angle. It's just longer instead of fatter.
Okay. Can we talk about solar energy? How important is solar energy to our energy, lowering our energy costs?
Solar energy is definitely one of the sexier discussion pieces. People love to talk about solar when it comes to energy efficiency, and there's some reasons for that. It's a very viable solution. The biggest problem with solar right now is just cost, and that's the biggest issue that energy efficiency deals with. Obviously, energy efficiency, there's two aspects to energy efficiency. People sometimes don't know that they're separated. But there is just the energy efficiency side. Do you want to be efficient with your energy use? Yes, I do. Well, you can take exorbitant measures. You can go way over the top, and you can spend more money than you'll ever return to your investment, but you will be more efficient. The question that most people ask and most businesses ask is, how do I be energy efficient so that it saves me money at the same time? And solar is sort of on that balance between those two worlds where you look at it and you say, okay, I can be efficient by using solar, but what's my payback? How much is this really costing me, and is it more expensive to use solar than simply to pay for my normal electricity? And that's where solar has come down, that the prices for solar panels are dropping. Almost every day you hear news about them lowering the price on them because the technology is getting better and they're getting more efficient at producing them. And so solar is going to become, in the future, one of the mainstays of energy for the planet. That's just a fact and a reality for it. But the interim solution of can solar really work for homeowners and for some businesses is really an economics question. The answer to that question is for most without government incentives of some kind, the solar is really unattainable for the average person.
Attainable for the average person. We come at life from different socioeconomic backgrounds, you know what I mean? Can you offer some suggestions on how people can get this modernized weatherization equipment for their homes, how they can access it more affordably? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do that are really simple to get started. A lot of energy efficiency doesn't require high-tech stuff. It requires simply putting more insulation into your attic. Most people can do that. Most people have a relative that they could bring over to the house to help them if they couldn't do that. Insulation is relatively cheap. Caulking windows and doors, very inexpensive. Very simple to learn to do. If you've never done it before, it's pretty simple to learn, simply learn. And then from there, you can get into things like the lighting. Lighting is an easy thing, replacing the light bulbs. People look at it and they think, wow, it costs so much more for one of those CFLs than it does for a regular bulb. I'm going to stick with regular. But actually, if you run the numbers, it's far more. It's like three times more expensive to run a regular, what they call incandescent bulb, the standard bulb that you see. It's about three times more expensive to run one of those over the life of that bulb than it is to use one of the CFLs. So as long as that CFL is within three times the cost of that incandescent, you're saving money. And those are small items that you can step into. They don't have to be a complete remodel all at once, because energy efficiency, one of the beautiful things about it is the second you do it, you're putting money back in your pocket. You're saving some money. So the second you turn on that CFL, you're starting to save money. There are a lot of government programs out there. Every state is different. Every county, there's all sorts of these programs. And they come and go, and so it's sometimes wise to call your local utility company and find out from them what the current incentives are. And they're oftentimes incentives for doing energy audits. So they will actually incentivize.
But you're saying utility companies are making offers to people as well. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. I can't say that all of them, but a lot of the utility companies, and people don't quite understand this. They're like, why would the utility company want me to use less energy? Isn't there a conspiracy in that? And the reality is that most utility companies have a demand growth cycle that shows, you know, 10, 15 years out that they're going to have to build new power plants in order to meet the growing demand, because people aren't buying, people are buying more and more electronics. They're not getting rid of electronics. So they've got a cell phone. Now they've got an iPad. Then they've got something for their TV. They've got a cable box. And so the demand keeps going up slowly and slowly. The economy slowed it here for a while, but it's going up. So the power companies are going to need to build power plants sooner or later to meet that increase in demand. And so if they could actually reduce the amount of power people are using, that pushes off their need to build that power plant for another 5, 10, whatever years it is, which when you're talking $500 million to build a power plant, that's a lot of money that the power company saves. And so they are often interested in trying to reduce energy use so that it could save them in the long run. And then there's also some people like out here in Arizona, they've got what's called the Corporation Commission that regulates our power companies, and they're requiring it from sort of a green perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And they're requiring that the power companies do these things to help buy down the cost of energy in the future and to keep things on a more sustainable level. But a lot of it's political, and some of those incentives can come and go. But the reality is they're here, so jump in there and take advantage of them while you can. And don't be persuaded by the naysayers who say that the power companies have some sort of alternative motive, because it doesn't matter at this point whether they really do or don't, because if they're giving you free light bulbs, take them. If they're giving you know, discounts for energy audits, take them. There's no strings attached to those things. They're not going to come back and, you know, rip out your light bulbs later on or some craziness. There's a lot of advantages out there, but they're always changing. So you got to be talking to the power companies and to your local utility organization, find out what the incentives are. and get behind them because they can put some money in your pocket.
Wow, that's really useful. Let's talk about different forms of energy that we're using in our homes, whether it be natural gas or electricity or solar energy or coal or whatever we're using, gas, whatever we're using to heat our homes. I tell you what, let's look at this. If we were to go about building a new house, a brand new house, what would be the most energy efficient form of energy to use in that house?
Well, you only have a handful of choices of energy in the United States. The smallest of those, I would say, would be wood stoves. There are people that truly heat by wood stoves. I was one of those for 3 years when I lived in Vermont. We didn't use our electrical panel heaters. So we actually use wood to heat by, not the most efficient source, but obviously in Vermont, it's a very readable source, ready and at the able because there's lots of it. So economically, it was cheaper to use wood. But you've got electrical is the main piece. So you've got electricity, which will come from the power company, and you've got gas from the gas company. And those are the two main sources of power you're going to find in the majority of homes. How they get that electricity to you is there's a number of different ways. About 50% of it is from coal. So over 50% of that energy nationwide that's used, every utility has a slightly different portfolio of how they get their energy. But coal is the biggest one, so they're burning coal to get you electricity. Some of that they're using hydro from the dams, and some of it is what they call renewable portfolio, which is your solar, wind, and geothermal. And then they've got, obviously, nuclear is in there as well. And so those are the ways they get the electricity to you. You can also do your own electricity through solar panels. That's basically localized electricity, but it's still electricity, so it's still feeding the same network. So you put the panels on your home, you power your home during the times you're there, and when you're not there, you have a net metering agreement with the power company, and they will buy back the excess power during the workday, theoretically, when you're at work. And we're out here in Phoenix, Arizona, so this very much applies to what we do out here. And they buy back the power during the day because you're not at home. Your AC is turned way down. And they're feeding it to the grid so that they can power the big buildings, like the one I'm in right now. And so that helps the power company. It doesn't really put much money back in your pocket as a homeowner, but it's a really good feeling to know that you are actually powering the grid backwards. So solar is a big piece of that. Then you can get really independent and go with wind farms and windmills. Those are more problematic because people, unless you're benefiting from the windmill, you probably don't like to see that big thing flipping around in the shadows all day long when the sun goes across it and makes the shadows come across your home. So the windmills are localized to wind farms for the most part. But the biggest thing you can do when you're building a new home is to get one that is built really tight. And as they call it in the business, tight is good for energy efficiency. And so you want to have a home that is very well insulated, is well put together, so there's no gaps in the insulation. Because if there's a gap, for an example, if you've got everybody's seen insulation, those big sheets of insulation they put up there with the big cardboard back piece to it, there, a little paper back to it, the pink insulation that you put into the side of the wall, if there's a gap in that insulation that runs up the side of the wall right next to the insulation, you are dropping the value of that insulation by a factor of 2 or 3, I think it is, I don't know what the number is. But basically, because air will move around that insulation, just like when you're holding your hand under a faucet, the water's going to find a way to get around your hand. And so when that hot air hits that insulation, it's going to find that gap, and it will run that gap and come right on into your house. And so even though you've got really good insulation, if it's not installed well, you're going to run into problems. So a well-built house and a well-designed house is the best solution. And those are things that you can retroactively do. You can do the same insulation thing. You can do the same caulking pieces, and you can build that in to create a more efficient home.
All right. A lot has been said about renewable fuels these days. the growing use of renewable fuels. What can we expect in the future where renewable fuels are concerned? How important are they to our energy needs?
Well, there's a big I'm not an expert on renewable fuels, but I'll tell you what I know about the marketplace and what's going on. And people talk about renewables in several different levels. You've got your renewables as in solar, which is very renewable, and wind, which is very renewable. And then you've got your biomass and your biodiesel and things like that, which are coming, bio means that they're naturally grown or they're somehow part of the environment. So you've got your biodiesel is coming from, you know, corn and the reuse of the oils from the restaurants and things like that. Those are renewable in the sense that, yeah, you can create more of them because you're creating oil from the corn, but the idea is that you got to then plant the corn to get the oil, to get the restaurant, to get the used oil back to the biodiesel plant. And so there's a renewable aspect to it, but it's not as clean and simple a renewable as sunshine or wind, which clearly every day they're renewed. There's just more of them. It just keeps coming. So the biggest push you see recently in renewables, and it's one that's actually sort of pushed the market off a little bit and caused it to go off kilter, is the natural gas. Natural gas market has exploded in the last, if no pun intended there, it exploded in the last couple of years because of big finds of natural gas in the United States. And you've got people like Keeboom Pickham, who was one of the big corporate raiders in the 80s. And he's a very big proponent now. You see him on all these talk shows and everywhere he can go talking about how natural gas is the next bridge that we need to the future. And granted, he's got a good argument. We need a bridge to the future. We can't subsist on dirty coal and imported oil as much as we do. Let's find a bridge. But it's a bridge. It is not the future. And so get behind something like natural gas, that's good, but it's got an economic element to it, but it also has an environmental element. Natural gas is not a solution in the sense of let's clean up the air and let's clean up the environment. It still puts out a lot of carbon dioxide, not as much as coal does, but it still puts out a lot more than solar does.
Let's look a little bit at some of the fossil fuels, like oil and coal. I understand that fossil fuels energy is targeting blacks. What can you tell me about fossil fuels?
I'm not sure what you mean by targeting blacks, but what I can tell you about the fossil fuel market, I mean, you've got three main aspects of the fossil fuel market. You've got oil, coal, and then natural gas. And they all come out of the same general idea of how fossil fuels play into the system. What I've seen in terms of a socioeconomic impact is that obviously it's just a general environmental perception as well, is that those in poorer neighborhoods bear the brunt of a lot of this stuff. And they bear the brunt of a lot of the problems associated with these industries because they are naturally polluting industries. They have to work to get this stuff out of the ground. It doesn't just come for free. But in terms of how it is played out into the marketplace, the coal, the oil, natural gas, they all go to the power company, with the exception of natural gas, which can come to you in its own direct form from the gas company. But coal and oil, they go to the power company. The power company uses those along with nuclear and hydro, if they have it available, to create the electricity that they then send to your home. And the more they burn coal, the more polluting it is. And the more polluting it is, the pollution is not just carbon dioxide, which is one of them, but there's a lot of pollutants that come out of coal. But the problem with coal is that it's so cheap. And it's so readily available in the United States. That
affordability is one of the reasons there might be an advantage to coal. Is that true?
Well, it's why over 50% of the power generated in the United States today is coal. I mean, 50% of the power that comes to you through that plug comes from coal alone. And there's a reason for that, because it is cheaper, a lot cheaper than nuclear, than hydro, than all these things. Hydro can get cheap if you amortize the whole dam over the life of the plant. But, day to day, coal is cheaper. But the problem is that we're running out of the good coal. We're running out of the anthracites and the things like that out in West Virginia area, and we're focusing on the softer coals way out here in the Montana area. And the softer the coal, it means the less carbon and the more impurities in there, and that's where a lot of the pollution comes from.
Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about yourself, about you, Mike. You are a lawyer by training, is that correct?
That's correct.
Tell me something of how you got into Denby Energy Auditing. How did you get into this industry?
Sure. I started off going to college, doing the good thing. I went to college actually down in Atlanta. And in my last year in college, I got interested in a new program that was brand new for Emory at the time. It just came on. At the time, it was called something like the Human and Natural Ecology or something sort of major. It actually was an environmental science major. And so I got very interested in that in the last year and a half of being at the college. And from there, I got into the environmental world and then went on to law school and became an environmental lawyer. So I did environmental and natural resources law for lots of different people. I worked for a short period for the state of Arizona, but I also worked for a lot of the big copper mines and some of the cement manufacturers. And so I've seen all sides of the table. And then about 5 years, 6 years ago now, I just got tired of the lawyer grind. And I was like, there's got to be a better way to make my mark in the world than just doing work for some other company. Why don't I work for myself? And so I started looking around for things to do, and I got very interested in the energy efficiency side of things because I thought that's where you can really have an impact. You can really make a difference in this world by educating people about energy efficiency, and it empowers them. But at the same time, it was also really empowering for me because it created an opportunity to not only teach people about energy efficiency, but to also teach them how to make a career out of energy efficiency, how to turn this into dollars for them. Because what I'm selling is knowledge to people on how to become more efficient. Well, once you learn how to do what I do, you can do the same thing. And so that became a big part of our business model, was to teach people how to do energy efficiency. And it has a real one of the great things about energy efficiency is you don't have to spend 4 years as an apprentice or going to a technical college or, going to real college like I did. Nothing wrong with going to college and law school, but there is an entrepreneurial side that is really, sort of the American dream prototype of, I'm going to go out and do this myself. And let me see who else has done it and how they've done it. And once you learn, it's something you can do. And you get involved with it, and it's so empowering to be able to do it as your own company, that you're the person, you're the knowledge that everybody wants. And so it's been great. And we've trained over 1,000 programs trained over 1,000 auditors across the country to go out and do this at the home and commercial level. And they've had some great successes out there. And so it's really a very inspiring place to be. Did I lose you, Patricia? Hello?